Okay. So, thank you. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about is going to be not just Kiruv. Kiruv is, Kiruv has to do with the other. I'm being the Kiruv him. That's not what we're going to talk about. There's no mitzvah in the Torah to be mekar of anybody. There's a mitzvah, v'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha, which is a completely different sort of a mitzvah. I'm sure you've had times, you're in your house, there's a knock on the door, you go to answer it, and there are two people there, young, smiley. They represent the Mormons. Did this ever happen to you? Yes. That's not what we're talking about. There's a difference between what we're doing as Jews with each other and missionizing. What's the difference? A missionary, ideally, is going to affect somebody's life by convincing them to be something that they aren't presently. You're this, you're a savage pagan, and you'll turn into an enlightened Christian. This is what they see. That's missionizing. The mitzvah ve'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha is assumptioned on this, that we're like, from Hashem's perspective, we're like one soul. So we're not talking about somebody who isn't you, we're talking about somebody who is you. So what that means is, even though we're separated by our bodies, every single Jew wants exactly what you want. What you want is what they want, underneath many layers, because they're you. So I want to talk about the concept of connection for a moment. So when you ask, what does love mean? Love your neighbors, you love yourself. How do you love yourself? What does love even mean? So there are various approaches to answering that question. One of them is, what love is committed connection. How connected are you to yourself, and how committed is that connection? So the answer there is, it all depends on what you mean when you say the words, myself. The problem is that the self is very fragmented. How many of you have ever been on a diet? That's it? One person in the first row? Okay. Boy, there are honesty issues that must be addressed. Okay, whatever. So, in any case. So, today, you all know there are no more diets today. Have you noticed this? When you buy a diet book, the first thing they tell you is the diets don't work. So, they're not going to put you on a diet. They're going to put you on a food plan. Okay? Or a life change. Okay, translate that. Okay. So here it is. One day you get up, you look in the mirror, you don't like what you see. You decide that that's it, I have to lose some weight. You go to the bookstore, you buy a diet book. Fat for Life, you've been on that diet. Okay, you open it up and they tell you about their food plan, and you go for it. So you get up in the morning and you eat fruit. Okay, so by 10 o'clock you're hungry, but it says right there in the book that you're not hungry. You are not hungry. So you have 2 cups of water, because you're not hungry, and soon it's time for lunch. And for lunch you have salad, and some steamed vegetables, and your protein of the day. And by around 4 o'clock you're hungry, so you have 2 more cups of water. And at around 5, you have your fruit. Then soon it's like 6:30, you could have your main meal. It's salad and steamed vegetables, your starch of the day. And at around 10, you're hungry, so you have 2 more cups of water. You go to sleep. Now, everyone knows the diet requires exercise also. So with all this water you've been drinking, at night you'll be whatever. So in any case, so here it is, several days pass, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, depending on your determination, and you're very hungry. You suck your quilt at night. When your niece comes, you say, you're such a sweetie, I could just eat you up. She looks nervous, starts backing away, you know, whatever. So Here's what doesn't happen. You don't say, okay, I've decided to be fat. No. You say, I just need like a little something to tide me over. Maybe a few crackers, just to tide me over. And there's an answering voice. You really shouldn't. Now here's what you have to notice. Who's I and who's you? I need something to tide me over, just a few crackers. You shouldn't have it. As soon as the you is not the I, the battle against weight loss has been lost. So the reason for this loss is that we have two aspects of self, the animal self and the spiritual self. The animal self is impulsive, is territorial, is desire-oriented, and the spiritual self is very different. They want different things. So when you're talking about being connected to yourself, the question is, which self? What should the relationship be between the spiritual self and the animal self? So the Gemara gives us this parable. There were two thieves, one was blind, one was lame. They're in an orchard. The lame thief says to the blind thief, if you could see those apples, you'd be there. You'd be taking them. They're amazing apples. And the blind thief says, I can't see them. I would pick them, but I can't see them. So he has an idea. The blind thief says to the lame thief, I'll tell you what, get on my shoulders, tell me where to go, we'll head me towards the trees, pick the apples, and we'll split them 50-50. Okay, this parable in the Gemara is about the relationship of the body and the soul. The soul could see from here into eternity, but it can't get anywhere on its own. It needs a body. The body is blind. It has no sense of future, tomorrow, depth. So the perfect relationship of soul and body is like the perfect relationship of horse and rider. So I should be your spiritual self, using your physical self, using your animal self. Okay, so you're connected to yourself. What do you want? And how do you extend that to other people who are also part of you because they want what you want? Let's talk about human wants. Think of your favorite food. You there? Have you noticed that everybody, people were half asleep a minute ago, now look awake and happy? Okay. So let's say you go home and somebody made some of your favorite food. You can handle that, I'm sure. The pleasure doesn't last very long. When you've finished eating, the pleasure is gone. And the reason for that isn't that the pleasure is illusory. This isn't Buddhism 101. We're saying it's all illusion. No. It's real. It just is shallow. So it doesn't last very long because it only relates to the moment. Which is why we don't have food yahrzeits. You know what I mean? Like, gosh, perfectly fried chicken. I think it was May 12th. Okay, light a candle. Now, does everybody in the world know this, that physical pleasure doesn't last very long? Everyone knows it intellectually. Most people are unwilling to know this emotionally because it puts them on the spot. Okay, the people who do know this emotionally want something more, so they usually go on to the pleasure of beauty. Having great looking clothes, having a gorgeous home, travel, art, music, dance. There's a problem with aesthetic pleasure, though. The problem is the gap between having and being. You could have all of the things I've just discussed. You could have a gorgeous outfit, you could have a fantastic home, you could have a piece of art, but being is elusive. You don't become what you have. In today's culture in the West, do most people know this? Very few people know this. They think you are what you have. Okay, but you're not. The people who figure this out go to the pleasure of relationship. So I want you to think about the person who you like the best. Boy, did you look better when I said, think of your favorite food. Okay, yeah, think of the person you like the best, but you go, it's scary, you know. Okay, so I'm not going to ask you who the person is. I'm going to ask you something else. I'm going to ask you what you like about the person you like the best. What do you like about the person you like the best?
She's very kind.
She's kind. Okay, what do you like about the person you like the best?
Real.
Okay, what do you like?
Positive.
Funny. Notice all these things are spiritual. You can't weigh and measure funny, positive, kind. What we love about the other person is their spirituality. And I want to tell you something. If when you're with them you feel funny and kind and positive, do you like the experience even more? That's called spiritual connection. And this is what we want the most. This isn't only what the people in this room want the most. This is what every single Jew wants the most. What you want, and every Jew who you'll ever meet wants the most, is spiritual connection. The one who brought the possibility of having authentic spiritual connection into the world was Avraham. He would find goodness and address it to anyone. He's compared to the sun. The sun shines over everyone. He would see the goodness in every person and address his own goodness to them and make spiritual connection. So Hashem made him a promise. The promise was, your descendants are going to have something of that. So it means a Jew could repress it, and for sure there are Jews who do, or it could be submerged, but it's always there. Every person who you want to know as a Jew is the person with whom you could have spiritual connection. Okay, that's not the only thing that makes us happy. The other thing that makes us happy is achievement. When you think of your moments of great happiness, usually achievement is part of the picture. Okay, from a Judaic perspective, and this is a very un-Western perspective, not all achievements are equal. So I remember this rather unsuccessful ad corporation put up ads in Har-Nof for a movie, which already tells you this was not a smart ad company, since there's no movie house in Har-Nof, nor do the people go to movies, but they had these ads plastered all over the place. For some movie, I don't recall anymore if it was an Israeli movie or an American movie, about a blind man who climbed Mount Everest. So from a Western perspective, how are you supposed to respond to that, assuming it's true?
Wow,
he's like blind, and he climbed, you know, Mount Everest. Wow. From a Judaic perspective, you would have to ask a question. Did he become a better person? Did the world become a better place? The effort doesn't inherently equal nobility. The aim to which the effort is directed defines nobility. I want to present this to you in a way that's easier to relate to. You've all seen the Guinness Book of Records, right? Yes? Remember the man with the longest fingernail? Now, this is effort. He doesn't live an easy life. You think he lives an easy life? There's a reason why most people don't have 8-foot-long nails. He can't drive a car. He can't even go in a car. He can't go in an elevator. He probably has to sleep like this. But that effort isn't in and of itself an achievement. Every Jew wants achievement. Where does that come from? It comes from Yitzchak. Let's talk about Yitzchak for a moment. So the longest Yitzchak narrative in the Torah is about his well digging. Do you remember thinking when you were young and you learned Chumash, let's say, the first time, who cares? Okay, you know, like, yes, he dug a well. And then another one. Okay, what's it really about? So the idea is as follows. There are really two paths in spirituality. One is Avram's path, which we just described. The other is being a well digger, where you're willing to go down to the depths and dig until you find something that could be a source of life. That's what achievement is about. Achievement means you're going to do what you have to do until you find something that's connected to the source of all things. Avram's spiritual movement, so to speak, comes from below to above to below. Yitzchak is below to above. It's the source of self-sacrifice. It's the source of being able to say, no matter how hard it is, and no matter how concealed the good is, I will find it. So Yitzchak was willing to dig into his own character and get rid of the dirt until he found a place within himself that wants true achievement. That's what Mesiras Nefesh means. Mesiras Nefesh doesn't mean being self-sacrificed for no reason. We've all seen ridiculous Mesiras Nefesh. The person who's thinner, okay. Where are they? Wait a minute. Okay, whatever. Okay. You know, like, I was introduced to the concept of size 00 a couple of years ago here in Brooklyn. I was in Borough Park. And I went into a Hamish's store, and you know, of course, it's always distressing. Some of you will know this as well as I do. Others of you have no idea what I'm talking about. The nice clothes are in the front of the rack, and the dowdy, ugly clothes are in the back of the rack. The dowdy, ugly clothes all come in double-digit sizes. Okay, so I'm looking at something at the front of the rack and say, you know, don't you have it in, like, size extra, extra, extra? And he says, no, look at what it says. So I said, it doesn't say anything. He says, no, that's the size. So it said zero. So I said, zero, that's a size? So he says, hast du gar nicht gesehen? you didn't even see anything. Is du gar nicht mit gar nicht? You can have nothing with nothing, okay? So, you know, we have these kind of vain acts of Mesiras Nefesh that sometimes even end in tragedy, since people equate being thin with being good and it becomes a control issue with oneself. We have who could own the most toys at the end of the game. We have people who sacrifice 80, 90 hours of their week every week to see that they'll win that one. Or you could be Yitzchak. You could say, I'll make any sacrifice I have to find goodness. Even my ego. Okay, so every Jew wants genuine achievement. So the question is, how do you find them? How do you find connection? How do you find achievement? The way to find connection is through the positive mitzvot. Give me an example of any positive mitzvah. I don't hear you. Well, most of observing Shabbos is what you don't do. What? Excuse me? Study Torah. Give me another one. What? Inviting guests. Look, let's look at these two. Okay. Inviting guests is a connective with your higher self. So I'm telling you for a moment, forget about the effect of your hospitality upon the guest. Leave the guest alone. When you invite a guest, you touch the part of yourself that loves giving, that's kind, that's sensitive, that's all of the things that you just mentioned a moment ago when you spoke about spiritual connection. You connected with your higher self. You put the seeing soul in the driver's seat. Let's think about studying Torah. You study Torah, forget about the informational side of it. You've connected your mind with God's will. Nothing could be a higher spiritual connection. Every positive mitzvah puts you in touch with your higher self. Negative mitzvahs have a different effect. The effect of negative mitzvot is to help you identify what real achievement is. Give me an example of a negative mitzvah. Don't steal. Give me another one. Don't murder. Okay. And I'll say, don't break Shabbos. So let's look at don't steal. We're all sitting here in this room, and nobody is stealing at this moment. Because I'm watching you. Okay, so. But you're not actually keeping this mitzvah, because you haven't resolved an inner conflict. You haven't dug in the dirt and found water. So I want to give you two examples of not stealing, and you'll tell me where it takes the person. Should we start with a heavy one or the light one? Light, okay. So you're at a bris, and they say, after they give the name, L'Torah, L'Chuppah, L'Masam Tovim, and everybody says what? Mazel Tov, Amen, or better still, Amen, Mazel Tov. And the mother's crying. Okay, let's go fast forward. It's 4 years later, 5 years later. The family's in Israel for a summer vacation. They're going to the Kotel on the bus, because that's the best way to go to the Kotel, since there's no parking in the old city, hardly. Okay, the mother is getting on the bus with her little five-year-old. Okay, you're supposed to pay full fare after four. But he's a short little five-year-old. So the driver gives her back change for one fare. And they sit down. And she whispers, if anybody asks you, tell them you're four. Could this happen? Sure. Does this happen? Sure. And how much did the woman save? 5 shekels 20. Is this going to save her, change her life at all? The animal self won. The impulsive, taker, territorial animal won. She could have achieved something. She could have achieved self-definition and a higher level of being. Let's look at a heavy one. Imagine someone who has a position at a bank. He's the supervisor. He isn't responsible to the supervisor, he's the supervisor. He desperately needs a loan to cover his mortgage this month, because if he could cover it just this month, he could break open his savings plans without losing interest next month. So he has the money to pay back. He could appropriate a certain amount of money and nobody will know it because he's the supervisor. What's the halachic name of this? And he will pay back. What's the halachic name of this? Theft. I'm glad somebody recognized it. It's not called borrowing. It's not called misappropriating. It's called stealing. Because stealing means taking what's not yours. So let's say he doesn't do it and he loses thousands of dollars. He's made a choice. His choice is that he'd rather see that whatever God gives him is God's will for him than to gain the immediate release what he perceives as distress. That's achievement. Every single mitzvah, whether it's positive or negative, brings you connection and achievement. Now, what does that have to do with our fellow Jews? What this has to do with our fellow Jews is that none of us are totally connected unless they're also totally connected. None of us have really achieved what we need to achieve unless the rest of Klal Yisrael has as well. So I want to explain to you why. The Gemara in an Agadah tells us that Paro's height was that he was like an etzba. He was a pinky. So Maharal, who understands Agadata in general as being non-literal, unless it sounds likely to be literal, you know, what does this mean, Paro was like a pinky tall? Like, wait a minute, I just had him a minute ago. Where was the Egyptian monarch? Okay, you know, okay. But say, he lived in a tiny little world. His world had one inhabitant. Who was his inhabitant? Who lived in his world? Himself. It's a tiny person. There are people who are huge, who have worlds that have almost limitless room for other people. These people are bigger. Hashem wants us to be big. He wants us to be inclusive, so that our connections and our achievements affect more than ourselves. So I want to tell you a story. One of my heroes is Rav Yitzhak David Grossman, who some of you have heard of. Okay, so I tell stories about him all the time. I may have told the same people the same story. And if I did, you'll survive. Okay? I'll try to remember a different one for next time. During the war, the Second Lebanese War, when people were coming down from the north to Yerushalayim, they asked for volunteers in Har Nof to house families from the north. So my friend and I went down to the Har Nof Minhelet and to sign up. And they looked at her and they said yes. And they looked at me and they said, "We'll call you if we need you." So, and this is without even getting my phone number. This would have been really my sunisa. So I guess I made an extremely good impression at the time. So in any case, my friend got a family, which is what she wanted. So they called her, they said, a family, two parents and three kids would be coming down that evening. So she and her husband are very refined people. So think these people, you know, they're sensitive. It must be so hard for them to go to strangers who they've never met for an indefinite stay. They don't know how long they'll be. Let's try to make them feel better about this. They practice topics that they could discuss at dinner. Now, they both have bad Hebrew. So after you get into Ech Korim Lecha, okay, then there's what? Meif Abatem. And that just about does it. So they got up to the second one, you know, Meif Abatem. And the husband of the family, whose name was Avi, said, "I'm originally from Akko, but I presently live in Migdal HaEmek." I said it backwards. "I'm originally from Migdal HaEmek, but I presently live in Akko." So that gave them something else to say. "Oh, Migdal HaEmek, that's where Rav Grossman lives, right?" So he says, "Do you know Rav Grossman?" So they said, "Not personally, but we've heard of him." He says, "I'm going to tell you about Rav Grossman." So this is a story within a story. So he said, when he was 8, he already was basically not living at home. His mother suffered from depression. His father couldn't handle it and left. And the house was a place where when his mother wasn't in bed and depressed, she was so appalled and so guilt-ridden by the level of neglect that would lead to shouting and sometimes even violence. It wasn't an easy place to be. So he would go to school in the morning and he would ask his friends to let him stay. "Can I stay by you tonight?" When he got a little older, even if nobody would invite him, he would find a way to get out of the house. So one fine night, he was sleeping in a park bench, it was the summer, and Rav Grossman passed him. "Now, be Rav Grossman, what do you say if it's, let's say, 1:30 in the morning, and you see a 12-year-old sleeping fully dressed on a park bench? What would you say?" "Who are you? What's happening? Why are you here?" He understood. He was able to become the person he's talking to. He didn't ask him his name. He didn't ask him why he's there. He said, "Hey, I know a place where they let you sleep for free on a bed." Okay, no questions asked. Bed, blanket, pillow, come. The kid was there. He was in his school for the next 6 years. Obviously, he called the social worker, called the police, called the parents. Okay, now, his school, Migdal Or, is the largest school in Israel. Throw a number. How many kids do you think that there were up there in Migdal HaEmek and Migdal Or? 500, 600, 1,000? Close to 5,000 kids. Okay, in many, many different kinds of schools. It's on this like enormous campus. Russian, Israeli, trade schools, yeshiva, girls, boys. Okay, the ticket in is that you come from a difficult family. That's your ticket in. I would imagine he doesn't know all the students that well. There are a lot of them. But he does have a conversation with all of them before they leave to find out their future plans and to give them guidance. So Avi was sitting in his office, and he presented him with three options, as he does to all of the boys. You could go study in yeshiva. You could go to a frum school where they'll teach you a profession. And to some of the boys, he would recommend the army, the religious army. So to Avi, he said, Avi, I have the best plan for you. You should go to Boys Town. You could learn computers all morning, and then in the afternoon you could study Torah. You'll have a way to support your family. That's the best idea for you. And he said, I don't want that. I want to be like you. You didn't go to Boys Town. You went to yeshiva. Now, all of his records are in front of Rav Grossman, and Rav Grossman says, Avi, you and a Gemara are not best friends. In fact, you're barely on speaking terms. Now, in a yeshiva, that's all they do all day long. It's going to be hard for you in yeshiva. You could still study Torah in Boys Town, but not all day long. He didn't listen. He got himself into a yeshiva in Bnei Brak. And it was easy to predict what the end of the story would be. He couldn't follow the shiurim. He would review and review, but it was like reviewing the phone book to him. It didn't mean anything. He got bored. He found other bored boys. Okay, and they're not up to doing anything commendable. And he noticed the other boys seemed to have money. So one of the boys clued him in. He said, you could look in the want ads in the newspapers and you'll see all the tzedakah organizations are willing to pay people to go door to door for tzedakah, and they pay you. So he began to do that for one of the reputable tzedakah organizations. But he noticed, even though he worked the same hours as some of the other boys, he always seemed to have less money. So another good friend clued him in. No one knows how much money they gave. You could take some. And it's not really stealing, because you're still giving them a lot of money. So he was soon stealing. And one thing led to another, and after a few bad nights in Tel Aviv, he realized that he didn't belong in yeshiva. He was ashamed to be in yeshiva. And he was in the low-life scene in Tel Aviv. He eventually got caught by the police. So the best day in his life, from an objective sense, certainly not the easiest day in his life, found him arrested. The sergeant behind the desk said, you're allowed two phone calls. I recommend you call your family and you call a lawyer, because you're only allowed two. He began to cry. He said he hadn't cried since he was eight. He was tough. Said, my family, I should call my whacked out mother? That's who I should call, a lawyer? Do you think I know a lawyer? So the sergeant said, I don't care if you call or not. It's up to you. I'm just telling you, you only have two. Don't waste it on calling people who can't help you. So he thought, who in the world, who in this whole planet could possibly help him? Called Rev Grossman in the middle of the night. Called him eight times till he picked up. He said, Harav, and Rav Grossman, and this is what moved me the most in this story. As soon as he said, hello, Harav, he said, Miza Avi? So he said, yeah. And he said, where are you? So he said, I'm in the lockup in Tel Aviv. He said, tell them I'm coming. They'll be there in a few hours. He drove down from Migdal HaEmek in the middle of the night, bailed him out, got him into trade school, found him a shidduch. Okay, lived happily ever after. It's not the end of the story. The story within the story within the story. So my friends, who took the family in, heard this story and were enormously moved. So the next day, they had a plan. Their plan was to take the people who were staying with them shopping, because they could only take with them what they could fit in the car. It's a family, you know, two parents and three children. How much could you put in the car? So they took them to Geula to buy things. They see this old man across the street. The man's looking at them and looking at them. He crosses, he says, Za'atu Avi. It was Rav Grossman's father. He had brought Avi to him once for a bracha. He remembered him. That's called being a big person. You could be a big person. Being a big person means being an inclusive person. It's your choice. When you choose to bring about a situation in which you're connecting through somebody else's connecting, you become a big person. When you become the kind of person where you're achieving through somebody else's achievement, you're becoming a big person. There are reasons why people are reluctant to do this. I'll tell you another story, but this story is not true. There was a chassid who got rich. So he decided to buy himself a yacht. Isn't that a great image? See, the chassid and his whole regalia, Newport News, you know, everybody else is in their crisp whites. Okay, so what does he know about yachting? He hired a non-Jewish captain. So here's Captain McGuire and Mr. Cohen. They're the first day. Now, here it is, sunset over the Atlantic. What's McGuire seeing? A symphony of color. What's the chassid seeing? Mincha. Okay, so he begins. You know, here he is standing at the edge of the boat. Okay, what's McGuire's wondering? Talks to himself. All right. He pays good money, it's not my business. Okay. He wants a better view. Okay. I guess he liked the first view. Oh no, he's losing his balance. Maybe seasick. Oh no, not the first day. But like he doesn't collapse or anything. So still just standing there, and soon there's this. And he's like, by this time he's really like, maybe he should say something. I mean, it doesn't look good, like if the boss like drops dead or something the first day, you know. But he seems to be getting a grip. But then finally there's this. Okay. That's too much. So McGuire goes up and says, Mr. Cohen, is everything okay? Now Mr. Cohen has three options. He could say, yes, McGuire. He could say, sure, McGuire, it's just like looking at the sea. Or he could say, I was saying afternoon prayers in the manner of Orthodox Jews. How many of you are sure that you would give the last answer? Good for you. Okay, a lot of people wouldn't. Why wouldn't you? It sounds weird. How does it look to go? Okay, whatever. I'll tell you why. If you're not at home with what you're doing, you can't give it over to someone else. The best way to be more connected and more achieved, as it says in the Shema, Vishinantam Levanecha, repeat it so that you could teach it. If you could teach it, you know it. If you can't teach it, you don't know it. How many of you have husbands who learned in Brisk or sons who learned in Brisk? Any of you? Fewer than admitted to being on diets. Okay, whatever. So one of the Reberl Zatzal's phrases was, "A chisaron in hasbara is a chisaron in havana." If you can't explain it, you don't know it. The imperative to know who you are and what you're achieving well enough to get it across to someone else could be transformative not only to them, but to you. Now there's a third need that people have, besides achievement, besides connection. The third need is belonging. We like to belong. Loneliness is appalling. We should belong. Hashem sees us all as one people. He sees us as one soul. He doesn't see us as myriad individuals who have nothing to do with each other. We live in a society in which it's hard to belong. I have a friend who who lived in Manhattan at the time. She's a lawyer. How many hours a week does a lawyer in a very good firm work? She was working in a good firm.
80
an hour. Okay, we'll leave it at many hours. So she would come home at odd hours. One day she came home and it looked to her that something was funny about her door. She thought somebody was tampering with it. So she was afraid. Maybe whoever was at the door is still in the apartment. Now this was like a long time ago before people had cell phones. You remember those days? People were coming out of the caves and beginning city states, you know, like. So she knocked on her neighbor's door. She told me this with tears in her eyes. She knocked on her neighbor's door and the neighbor let her in to call the police. Wasn't that special? Our expectations of belonging are so non-existent that she thought that was really, really very decent of the neighbor to do. So I foolishly said, well, what could your neighbor have done? I mean, it's the middle of the night, you're knocking on her door. Well, she could have stood behind the door and told me to go across to the all-night bar and call from there. It was very nice of her to let me use her phone. This is not our way. This is the way of others. I want to tell you a rule which is hard to hear. The more materialistic a person is, the less interested they are in letting others belong. Because in the material world, everything is limited. So as you learned when you were two, if you have three cookies and you give them one away, what do you have now? Two. Materially, the more you give, the less you have. And because of that, everyone's your competitor. Spiritually, if you're not into having, you're into being, the more you give, the more you are. So your interest is in being a big person. So that means concretely you have to reach out. You go to shul. There are girls who told me, Geneve girls, who live in Brooklyn, in these horrific little basements. They're not all so bad. Some of them are, some of them aren't. They can go to the same shul for week after week after week after week, sometimes for a year or two, without anyone ever saying good Shabbos. I'm not exaggerating this.
This is not Baltimore.
This is not Baltimore. Okay, without anyone inviting them for a meal. A girl lives in a basement. She has a balabayit. The balabayit has a sister. The sister has a cousin. The cousin has friends. There's no reason a girl should have to spend Shabbos alone. Okay, that's normal. And we picked it up from other people. We didn't pick, this isn't part of us. And this isn't only in Brooklyn. It's elsewhere. There are reasons for this. If we go back four generations, the source of this feeling of us and them began. There was a time when the imagination and intellect of many young Jews were robbed from their heritage by the Haskalah, by the secularist movements of the time, by all of the isms. But that was four generations ago. Four generations ago, you had to protect yourself. Today, the girl in the basement is not going to make you fry. That's not what's going to happen. Four generations ago, somebody would hand you a pamphlet written by the socialists. When you offer your coworker challah, that's not going to happen. Don't waste your life fighting yesterday's battles. Okay, we have to be bigger and we have to reach out. An issue that some people have is how will this affect my kids? So I want to tell you how this will affect your kids. It'll make them bigger, it'll make them stronger, it'll make them more able to relate to themselves as Jews. There are many problems that we have with the kids today, as you know. There's no single If there was a single answer, then people would have come to it a long time ago. There are many issues. Shalom Bayit is an issue. The lack of time that people put into understanding their kids is an issue. The inconfidence to set boundaries is an issue. The educational system's inability to individuate is an issue. But I want to tell you something that's still another issue. We like to achieve something. We like challenge. So if you were to go back a couple of generations, your parents were challenged, if they were American, by keeping Shabbos in the workplace. You were challenged by looking at the values that surrounded you and saying, I believe in learning, at least for some amount of time. The kids aren't challenged by anything. Everything is handed to them on a golden platter. I didn't even say a silver platter. Okay, instead of having to fight to be able to learn, we bribe our kids into learning. I paid my kids money for knowing Mishnayos. I'm sure it was well spent money. But what's going to challenge them? When a kid has a guest and they see it as their guest and not only your guest, and they say, Mr. Cohen, this is a ritual we do before the meal. We wash with a cup. You know what they've just done? They've affirmed their connection with Torah. And if Mr. Cohen says, why do you do that? And the kid can honestly, and this will work if you teach them honesty and giving, say, I don't really know. I'm only a kid. I'm not a rabbi. Let's ask. He's affirmed his belief in Mesorah. Your kids will be stronger, but I'm going to make two qualifications. If they see the people you bring into the home as their guests, not only your guests, and if they believe that they have something to give. This could be transformational for us, it could be transformational for our kids. Okay, so to sum up the ideas that we've discussed, we spoke about being in touch with yourself, your higher self. We spoke about the spiritual self as opposed to the animal self. We saw self-love in its highest sense means attachment to the spiritual self. We said that that's established through the positive mitzvot. We said vanquishing the animal self is accomplished by the real achievement of observing the negative mitzvot. We said that we're like one body with many limbs and many organs, and that we have to be in this together, and that this makes us bigger. We said that this act of becoming bigger takes us to a place of more and more connection and more achievement. And we concluded by talking about belonging and expansion. So, if you have questions, the time's now. Where are the people I planted? Wait a minute. Yeah.
I was a little uncomfortable with you saying that the person on the boat should have explained to the non-Jew. Unless he knows this non-Jew very well, how does he know if he's not anti-Semitic? And you're alone with him on a boat. Why does he have to start saying anything but yes, sure, I'm all right?
Mr. Cohen the Chassid is already known to be a Jew by this non-Jewish captain. He doesn't think that it's like, you know, he's into black or, you know, whatever. He knows he's a Jew. He also knows that Mr. Cohen was behaving in a strange way. When you ask someone a civil question, what's up, and the answer you get is basically none of your business, that isn't what gives people a good feeling. Yeah?
What is the emotional self in it? The animal self?
Both the animal self and the spiritual self have emotional components. Yeah?
How do you address the issue of requiring people who are brought up from the
Aaronic religion? Okay, so.
What was the question?
How do you address the issue of Kiruv Krovim, people who were from and now are not from? Okay, so this issue is really not that different than Kiruv Rechokim. Okay, the majority of people who I've met, what do I know? I don't know more than you do, but the majority of people I've met who were off the derech, who were from and left, I have yet to meet one. I'm not saying there isn't one, but I personally have yet to meet one who said that I was looking at the elliptical theory of universal gravitation, and I found that I personally feel more comfortable with the Galilean approach. Okay? Although there are those who would argue that the special but not general theory of relativity would justify the Torah's view. I haven't met anyone who said that. People who are off the derech have nothing against God, except that they've suffered. People who are off the derech have nothing against the Torah, except that it hasn't made them happy. And the reason why it hasn't made them happy is usually because of emotional issues for boys and men with the system and the schools, with girls and women, usually with their families. Okay, there's some overlap, but that's been the paradigm that I've seen. So if you're, so acceptance and love and explaining what the mitzvahs are meant to do so that they have some kind of pnimius in their attachment to mitzvot, so that they're not only addressing them from the outside, is what usually makes a difference. But you need the love, and you need the acceptance. The men need the acceptance, and the women need the love. And what they both need is understanding of the pnimius of the mitzvot. Yeah? I can't hear you. Want to stand up? Yes. Judge people. People, unless somebody has a very strong sense of self-esteem, very few people are ever going to say, you're right, I'm wrong. That's not going to happen. People hear what you say because they've heard it physically. They mull it over. At the time, oftentimes, they're not going to tell you you're right, but it's there. This is a true story that I'm telling you. Some of you know the person involved, and I'll use her real name because she's told the story about herself more than once publicly. Blima Feinstein is a great friend of mine. Do any of you know her? Isn't she marvelous? So she's a woman, she's a professor, she became firm in her 50s. She's a very spiritual person, she had been on other spiritual paths before. Her husband is a very practical, down-to-earth man. And he was very tolerant of her, you know, like she's a professor, okay. So she became frum, and they have a good marriage, and she saw that her frumkeit would only make the marriage better. In other words, many men could handle sitting down to a gourmet meal Friday night with their wife very well dressed and candles on the table. A lot of men could handle that, okay, you know. I mean, that's much better than Thursday night, where you like you pop the plate out of the microwave and say, here, dear, like go back to what you're doing. So he, you know, it was fine with him. She kept Shabbos. She was doing more cooking, less reading. It was fine with him that they kept kosher. She let him have his treif part of the kitchen. Now, she tried to talk to him, and it didn't go. She would put on Torah tapes all the time when she'd be working in the house, and he'd tune out. And after 13 years, 1-3, he turned to her and said, you know, you're right. She had no hint of what was going on under the surface. He wasn't showing his cards until he felt confident that it was the right thing for him now. Now, I didn't know any of this. So we're in contact very infrequently. So I was coming to America. I wanted to go visit with her. So she told me, you know, where to get off the Long Island Railroad to her home. And she said, Alvin will pick you up. So I get off at the station, don't see Alvin. called her up and I say, he's not here. Like, do you want me to take a taxi? She says, he's there. He left 25 minutes ago. I'll call him on his cell. She calls him. He says he's there, but I don't see him. I said to her, look, the only other person on the platform is some rabbi-looking fellow. That's him. Beard, the whole bit. Okay, you don't judge people too quickly. Even people who seem very far, very hard-boiled, you don't know what's going on under the surface. You don't know what may surface later. And I want to tell you something. It's also a no-lose situation. You take someone who's Mechallel Shabbos, yeah? And they ask you, why don't you turn on the light? It's like so primitive. Maybe in ancient times, like making fire was a big deal with the wood and the flint. So it's like nothing. This is primitive thinking. And you try to explain to them about 39 malachas and whatever, and it doesn't work. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? They'll keep on breaking Shabbos. It's the worst possible result. They're not going to break more Shabbosim because you didn't explain it well enough. Most of the time with people who don't know anything, you're in a no-lose situation. If they think you're an unpleasant person, that's a different story. If you're accusative, or if you're patronizing, or if you're angry, that's a different story. But if you're nice, even if the explanation doesn't sound good, it will still think, this is weird, it's not for me, and they'll continue doing what they were doing all along anyway. It's the worst possible thing that could happen.
There are a lot of unaffiliated Jews who are very active in helping people, helping the world in different ways, and they don't necessarily see that Funkite encourages that, encourages like helping the world, and don't see how they can fulfill in that.
So, the idea of helping the world is assumptioned on this, that people, that human life has value. Okay, the assumption that human life has value will come down to this, that we believe that people have souls and are different than animals. That belief is specifically Judaic. So what you have to point out to these people is that Judaism is what we would call the koach ha-me'ached, the force that unites people through morality. Our role is to be the moral teachers of the world, and the world is in dire need of moral teaching. Once you have the teaching and the example, then it's like you threw a rock in the stream and now it could ripple. But people are not going to help each other without this core moral teaching, as we observe.
That you're connecting with yourself when you're doing this with others. Because
right.
Consciously helping somebody else is not a very, it's not looked at positively when you're dealing with people who aren't from. If you're telling, I'm telling you, I'm teaching you, I don't need your help, I don't need your teachings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like leaving your help in need, you know? It's like, it's sort of like the person who's from is better, and they're teaching the secular person how to be good. And that's not, you're helping yourself. You're helping
right.
Yourself.
Right.
But it's important to put that out there.
It is.
Because they do feel it. They feel like, oh, you're helping me. I never say thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
I
need your help. Yeah. Oh, going once. Okay, last question. A natural capacity for empathy. So you have to develop it. So I'll give you an example of a way of developing it. I'm sure in America, as in Israel, you get these pamphlets in the mail for different tzedakah organizations, right? So if you have a 10-year-old taking out, saving the pamphlets for a few weeks and like putting them out on the table, say, we have $50 to give tzedakah. Which one do you think we should give the most to? Who do you think we should give more to? And letting them choose it by reading the stories. And then when you run out of the money, they'll say, what, we can't give this one anything? Okay. You have to develop their empathy. You tell them there are people who never had a Shabbos. You think we should invite them? Okay, the answer will be yes. If it's I'm inviting them and this has nothing to do with you, the answer will be who needs this? It has to come from their inner place of empathy. So, Zehu? Okay.